This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, in the news, Strauss is censured and Austin is out of control. We also go on the trail with the Texas Scorecard team, and we sit down in an interview with Aaron Harris of Direct Action Texas about a new voter fraud scandal in South Texas. And finally, in this week's commentary, Michael Quinn Sullivan will tell you about a free offer that no illegal alien will want to miss. Welcome back, friends and neighbors, to Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. Now let's get started with this week's news. First, let's talk to Brandon Waltons, Capital Bureau Chief with Texas Scorecard. Brandon, you've got an update on a story, kind of a developing story. It's been going on for a few months. The censure of Liberal Republican House Speaker Joe Strauss finally coming to fruition.
Yes, and this has been a long time coming. Now, last year, county parties across the state passed resolutions censuring Speaker Joe Strauss for obstructing conservative reforms ever since he's been in office, but specifically during the last special session.
Yeah, people were upset that this is, again, a very liberal Republican Speaker of the House, finally announcing he's retiring, leaving the legislature, but had been in for the last 10 years, and specifically over the most recent session, had killed all kinds of conservative priorities, things that were being pushed by the lieutenant governor, by the governor. He was just kind of standing against all of that, and you had all these county parties saying no, and specifically Bear County,
his
home district.
His home district from San Antonio, yes, censuring him for obstructing conservative reforms, like you said, like property tax reform, privacy legislation, even killing a spending limit bill during the special session.
Yeah, now, a while back, we had on Jeremy Blosser, SREC member and author of Rule 44 of the Rules of the Republican Party of Texas, and this is a provision to impose penalties on elected officials, Republican officials who don't cooperate with the party, who oppose the platform. And so under that process, it came up from Bexar County, the resolution that was passed there a month or so back.
Yes.
And is now came up to the State Republican Executive Committee, the statewide body that governs the Republican Party of Texas. And it was adopted. Tell us about what happened over the weekend.
Yes, exactly. It was adopted. Now, it's a very high threshold. It's a two-thirds threshold to pass this.
Two-thirds of all members.
Yes, two-thirds of all members. And so when the vote took place, it was 42-19, which put it right on the edge.
At like 65%.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And so Chairman of the Republican Party, James Dickey, as well as Vice Chair Amy Clark, both joined in and supported the censure resolution, ultimately passing it through the body.
And so they cast the deciding votes to pass this resolution. Now, I guess one of the questions here is, will it have any effect? I mean, he's not running for office, but this would say that the party officially says, we're not going to give you any party resources.
Right, exactly. And the interesting effect I think this is going to have in the primary is going to be the lawmakers who have tied themselves to Speaker Strauss are now going to have to answer for why they're supporting a speaker who is censured by his own party.
Yeah, I think it does send a message. Well, thank you for covering that, Brandon, and appreciate you coming on to talk about it.
Thank you.
Next, let's turn to Jacob Asmussen, our new Central Texas guy here with Texas Scorecard. You've got a great story up about something going on with the city of Austin. It might be going on with other cities where they are just straight up giving away cash.
Yeah, see, I wish I could have gotten in on this before the end of the program. Because what it was, it's a match savings program, right?
Yeah, free money. It's
free money
for nothing. Yeah,
right?
Everybody wants free money.
So it's designed like this. Low-income people can apply for this city savings account,
okay,
and they get an 8-to-1 match
on
yeah, money they put in.
Hold on. Eight. So,
so
for every
800%
dollar.
Interest.
God.
So if I put
my investments are not in the right place.
I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah, we're all doing something wrong. Hold on. Okay, so they're 8-to-1 match. This is free money if they open a savings account?
Right. So you put in $500, you get $4,000 from the city, right? And what it's supposed to be for is for a home ownership, small business investment, or paying for education, right? But the problem is no oversight occurred along the whole process of the program. So,
well, I think the problem is the program's completely insane.
Right.
Okay. But, so let's start there. But let's go to the second level. Yeah, let's talk about the management of the program. I mean, it's worse than it even sounds.
Right. So they didn't verify the applicants to see whether or not they were actually low income or actually telling the truth. They didn't verify where the money was supposed to be going. And then there was no follow-up on where the money was actually spent. So Tony, it's kind of like this, okay? Picture a bank, right? And you go inside the bank, and there's a long line of folks going to the counter. And at the counter, there's a City of Austin employee with a big pot of cash beside them, okay? And so the person at the front of the counter goes up, and they say, hey, I'd like to get some money. And the City of Austin goes, great. How much do you want? And they go, well, I got $500 here. And the employee goes, great. And they turn to their big pot of cash and pull out a big stack.
Big pot of taxpayer cash.
Right, right. And they slap down $4,000 on the table and say, well, here you go. And the person says, thank you very much, and walks out. And that's about it.
So, couple questions. What was the criteria to actually qualify for this program? And you've told me, and I think in the article talks about it, wasn't enforced, but what was right. Who was eligible?
Low income, meaning assets, net assets below $10,000, other qualifiers like that. But again, none of it was checked, so...
You just said it was. Okay. And then how much money overall was given out under this program?
So they had $600,000 of combined state and federal funds, and they had given out $300,000 of it up till now, but the rest is already committed to pending.
Okay. So they've given out $600,000. There's a little bit of pushback from the city council, so is the program going to continue or go away? Do we know?
Well... I hope it goes away, but yeah, the bigger problem here is one of the city council members said that, yeah, like this is happening across a ton of our programs where there's no oversight occurring, and in her words, we're just throwing money at a wall and hoping it works.
Yeah.
And so that's great.
Yes. as taxpayers are struggling for affordability in Austin, struggling with property taxes, we're just throwing money out there with no accountability. Well, I appreciate you covering this. I think the most concerning element, federal money, this has to be going on other places.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We don't even know the full extent of this.
Yeah, I think you know, folks are going to need to check this article out and look into their own cities and make sure that this kind of waste isn't happening there.
Absolutely.
Thanks for that report.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome back on the program Aaron Harris with Direct Action Texas. Aaron, we've had you on before to talk about the issue of voter fraud in Texas, and y'all have been involved in some really important voter fraud investigations exposing corruption in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. But now you're involved in a new investigation, a new controversy down in Nueces County, kind of the Corpus Christi area. And so I'm glad to have you on. Thank you for joining the program.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be back on with you.
Yeah, so tell us about what's going on down in South Texas. What have you found, and what are y'all doing about it?
Sure. So, as you mentioned, this is Nueces County. Everybody knows it as Corpus Christi, but as you head into Corpus, there's a little town called Robstown, Texas, and they're no stranger to election fraud and election integrity issues. Last year, in 2016, I guess now it would have been 2 years ago, they have an open investigation into mail-in and in-person fraud down there. And so this is something that's well-known and documented in that county. What they did in November of 17, they had their city council races on that date in November, unlike most cities in Texas. And once again, what we saw was they used harvested ballots for their mail-in ballot operation to affect the city council races.
Now, harvested ballots, I mean, I know a little bit about this, but for listeners who aren't familiar with these scams and these schemes, you know, tell us a little bit, how does it What is a harvested ballot? How does that voter fraud? Sure. What does that mean?
So harvested ballot is we're referring to ballots that are done by mail, so mail-in ballots, and these are going to be elderly voters. They typically prey on English second language or very elderly voters over the age of 90. And what they're doing is they're voting on behalf of that voter using different methods and techniques. But they apply for the ballot. The voter never even knows they applied. The ballot then comes to the voter, and they go to the houses and collect these ballots under various pretenses and actually cast that ballot in a way that the voter has no idea who they actually voted for. Or in some cases, the voters have no idea they actually even voted. So those are harvested ballots. You see this in Dallas. Right now we have a guy who, by the name of Miguel Hernandez, who's under arrest and being held for having harvested 766 votes in a single member city council race.
Wow. And just for that example, how many votes are we talking about in the overall election?
2,000.
Wow. So you're talking 700 out of 2,000. I mean, that's
right.
That's the difference in just about any election.
That's right.
That would go on. So let's dive into this a little more. So my understanding is they go out and they put in these applications for ballots by mail, possibly forging signatures or tricking people into signing forms. And then they collect the ballots, they pre-fill the ballots, and then they kind of go and get these folks to sign on the way they want them voted. Or are we seeing them actually, you know, forge signatures and that kind of thing as well?
So you do see forged signatures, but I'll give you an example of one of the complaints we filed in Nueces right now, that we interviewed a gentleman. The harvester showed up at his house, asked him if his ballot had arrived, said actually it did. So they open up the package, get the ballot out, and the harvester tells this gentleman to go ahead and sign the carrier envelope. And while he's signing the carrier envelope, the harvester is filling out the ballot for him, never asking him who to fill it out for, just filling it out. And the voter looks up and says, oh, hey, I want to vote for my cousin, who was running for a local office, I don't remember which office, and the harvester says back to him, too late, I've already filled out your ballot.
No.
Okay.
So
too bad, so sad, I've already filled out your ballot, now hand me that carrier envelope, and he's about off and on his way, right? So they normally do this, by the way, under the guise of, they'll show up and they'll say something like, hey, we're out talking to our community. We want to make sure our community is represented in this election. Did you get your ballot? Well, they know you got your ballot. That's why they're at the door. You say, yeah, I got it. And they'll say, okay, well, let me help you with that. Now, here's the thing, Tony. When you open up your ballot, it comes with instructions in English, instructions in Spanish, a letter from the Secretary of State thanking you for voting. It comes with your ballot, your carrier envelope, your security envelope. There's all this stuff in there. And they go, oh, this is all very confusing. Just sign this right here. I'll take care of the rest.
Wow.
So the voter actually thinks that they're doing them a service, right?
Yeah, yeah. Here's this guy helping me.
This guy's helping me.
Yeah, this guy's helping me, but he's helping himself. He's helping
That's
himself
right.
to their vote.
And what you'll find, so what happens in that scenario is the voter actually signs what's called their carrier envelope. That's the envelope that carries the ballot back to elections. But if you go back and pull and look at their application for that ballot, the application signature is forged. What happens is these harvesters sit around and they pre-fill out applications using voter rolls, and they typically are harvesting the same voters year in, year out. And so they will sit down and apply for Tony McDonald at 123 Main Street in Austin, Texas, whatever. And then they know when your ballot's coming out, and they show up at your house and harvest. It's called harvesting because they harvest the actual ballot, not the application. What's interesting is when we talk to these voters, and you say, you know, how'd you get your ballot? The voters don't ever stop to think about it. They just say things like, oh, my ballot comes automatically, or the mayor sent it to me, or
yeah,
whoever
they
think
don't even,
does it.
They don't even realize they have to apply because it just
exactly.
shows up. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the first step.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I wanted to talk more specifically about what's going on there in Corpus. So, you know, these are kind of some general examples of what's going on, and we've seen it up in the Metroplex, but specifically, you know, what kind of evidence are y'all seeing down in Corpus that made it into these criminal complaints?
So the interesting thing is, there's two kind of ladies that run this operation down there. One is the mayor of Robstown. Her name's Amanda Barrera. She goes by Manny Barrera. And then Rose Flores. Rose Flores actually goes out. We filed multiple complaints on Rose. The interesting thing about Rose is most of the community there, these are by and large low-income Hispanics, and they're very scared of Rose. And the primary reason they're scared of Rose is she has a couple sons, one of which is the police chief there in Robstown, the other of which is a constable in Nueces County. So she kind of has a strong thumb on this whole community. But they go out and harvest these ballots. And the interesting thing, they had a slate, and everybody on their slate received the same number of mail-in ballots. It's the most bizarre thing you've ever seen.
So nobody who was voting out there decided, oh, well, you know, I'm going to vote for this. You know, I'm going to vote for Jimmy, but not for Johnny. You know,
right.
No, they all voted exactly straight. I mean,
exactly
yeah.
the same.
So, wow.
And so it's, yeah, you look down the slate and you go, okay, you know, Manny was on the ballot, right, the mayor. So she got 147 mail-in ballots. Fecky got 147 mail-in ballots. And then 132, 132, 132, 132, and 130. And I'm like, I see a pattern here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have let's take, my mind's going blank, but you start looking at the results, and you have candidates who won the in-person, both early and election, but lost by 137 mail-in votes from the mail-in ballots, right?
Wow.
And so our two red flags, we always say, these are red flags that don't necessarily mean there's fraud, but what we look for first is, was there a high number of mail-in ballots relative to the overall ballots cast? Typically in election, Tony, you see 3 to 12-13% of the overall ballots cast are mail-in. When you start getting into areas where you see 20, 30, in Dallas City Council race, we saw 44% of the ballots were mail-in. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
When you start seeing those kind of numbers, that's not organic. Like, something's driving that.
Now, the problem is, you know, there are legitimate ways to drive mail-in ballot turnout, you know, trying to make sure that people you think will vote for you will get mail-in ballots. And so just the fact that there are, you know, plenty of mail-in votes is not, you know,
it's an indicator, not that's right.
Evidence. Yeah.
It's an indicator. It's what we look for to go look to see if there's something there. There's been several we've looked at where there wasn't, right? So we look for two things. One is what I just said, a high percentage of mail-in. The second is if the mail-in was different than the in-person, right? So back to the example I just gave, if the in-person went, you know, if Tony and Aaron Harris were running against each other and Tony wins all the in-person, but then Aaron wins all the mail-in disproportionately, 85-15 to Aaron, that tells us we should go look at that. Doesn't mean there was fraud, but if you find both of those, we haven't found a situation yet where there's both of those that there wasn't harvesting going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you could have natural things, right? Your mail-in ballot should relatively follow your early voting results because those voters are voting with the same set of information, right? And so if you have early voting people voting, you know, 55-45 for Tony versus Aaron, the mail-in vote's going to typically be similar to that because, again, those voters, whereas Election Day voters might be voting with information that came out last minute and it might change it significantly, right? So there are things in the data we look for first, but at the end of the day, what people need to understand is these applications and the carrier envelopes are open records. So anybody, whether it be a candidate or a watchdog like ourselves, can request these from the county and go look at them. And what has to happen is the signature on the application has to match the signature on the carrier envelope in order for that carrier envelope to be open and that ballot cast. So what we find in these cases, these complaints that we have, are situations where the signature on the application does not match the signature on the carrier envelope. And what happens is, as we look at these, we can figure out who the handwriting on the application is.
Yeah.
In this case, we filed four sets of different complaints. One set is on Amanda Barrera, the mayor. One is on Robert Gonzalez, who works for the city. The next is Rose Flores. And then the last category are ones that we know are done erroneously, but we don't know who the offender is, right? So that's that's for the law enforcement to figure out.
Well, now, so the situation there, you've got the chief of police and the constable are all kind of in the family on the whole deal. Who you know, needs the pressure to do something about this? Is the attorney general, the district attorney? Who's really in a position to actually prosecute?
Well, so this is one of the only seven things that both the DA and the attorney general have concurrent original jurisdiction. So either can prosecute. I'm a big proponent of the AG doing it because, again, this is all local politics,
right?
The police chief, the constable, et cetera. It's kind of a buzzsaw for the DA. But the DA could pick this up What we've seen down there is the local DA in Nueces County has no desire to get involved in this. It's been going on for years, and they haven't done so. So it's going to need to be
the Attorney General. Well, I appreciate your work on this, and I want you to keep us apprised as this develops. I think y'all are probably very early in the process. For listeners out there who want to learn more, I mean, we've kind of just scratched the surface. For listeners who want to learn more, tell them where they can learn more about Direct Action Texas and specifically about the work you're doing there in Nueces County.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Tony. And it's real simple. Our website is directactiontexas.com. So you can go right there and you can read about Nueces and our other cases as well.
All right. Well, thank you, Aaron. And we look forward to having you back on this. We are a long ways away from being done with this problem.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tony.
All right, for this week's On the Trail segment, we'll reach out to Carrie Cheshire. Carrie, you're out in East Texas now, meandering around the states, looking at all the races that are going on in every corner of the Lone Star State. Give us a little bit of an update.
Sure, that's right, Tony. As our listeners know, we started up in the Texas Panhandle back at the beginning of January, cut down through the heart of Texas, then east to the Metroplex, down to the Houston area where we wrapped up last week. And now we're here behind the pines in East Texas, talking to conservative activists, conservative candidates, and checking out all of these Texas House Republican primary campaigns, really where the fight is here in the state of Texas for the conservative movement and the future of Texas's government.
Yeah, tell us what you're learning.
Well, you know, I think all across the state, property taxes are the biggest issue. People are frustrated with the ever-increasing appraisals, the ever-increasing property tax rates, and they're even more frustrated that lawmakers failed to get reform across the finish line, especially Texas House lawmakers. This is an issue that passed in the Texas Senate not only once, but twice in the regular and in the special sessions. It's one that Governor Greg Abbott added as a priority, but it's one that failed in the Texas House, and it's because of a lot of these establishment lawmakers all across the state that obstructed it.
Yeah, now, last time we talked about some of the good candidates, conservative challengers running against incumbents in the House down in the Houston area. Which ones have you checked in on since then?
Sure. So kind of as we were leaving Houston up in Montgomery County, we checked in with Steve Toth, a former member of the Texas House who gave up his seat to run for the Texas Senate, was unsuccessful in that, and Brandon Creighton took that seat. Then he ran for Congress, unsuccessful in that. But in both of those campaigns, he kept the Woodlands very loyal to him, very enthralled with his conservative record of leadership in the Texas House, the taxpayer champion in the time that he served. Well, now that his replacement, Mark Keogh, is stepping aside to run for county judge, he's entering the ring trying to retake his old seat. And, really big groundswell of conservative activists, community leaders supporting his campaign. I think he's the clear front runner right there. He's somebody who Matt Schaefer, the chairman of the Texas House Freedom Caucus, who we'll get to in a minute, has already said he'll be immediately inducted as a full-fledged member, won't have to serve the probationary term because he's a known commodity, a known conservative voice in the Texas House.
Yeah, great record when he was in. Speaking of Schaefer, tell us about his race.
Well, Schaefer's the man to beat up in Tyler. We checked in with Joanne Fleming, a hyper-conservative activist up here in Texas with Grassroots America, We the People. They had a big conservative superstars rally with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, Matt Schaefer, Bob Hall, Brian Hughes. And really, it was a celebration. Had everything short of fireworks, a lot of fire brands. Celebrating the conservative leadership of Matt Schaefer, Dan Patrick, Ted Cruz, and he's really the man to beat in Tyler. Even the establishment there, folks like former State Senator Kevin Eltife, the former mayor of Tyler, who didn't exactly have a conservative record in the Texas Senate, are supporting Matt Schaefer. His opponent, Ted Camel, really mixed record, served in the Texas House a century ago, and not really gaining any traction with anyone in the Rose City.
Yeah, no, I just got an article up about him assaulting a student when he was a teacher, so I'm sure that's an issue there on the campaign trail. What other races are you seeing?
Well, we're stopping down here. We're actually in Jacksonville today, checking in with Danny Ward as he runs against Travis Clardy, one of the most liberal Republican members of the Texas House, somebody who often votes with Democrats, even on issues like protecting life and tort reform. A really, kind of out-of-touch lawmaker for this conservative East Texas district. We'll also be checking in with Garrett Boersma as he runs against Chris Patty, an establishment lawmaker who took Wayne Christian's seat after he was redistricted out by House Speaker Joe Strauss as part of a cleansing operation once he and the Democrats took power from Republican Speaker Tom Craddock. But I've got to say, all of these campaigns I feel like are going really, really well for these conservative challengers. The big question, I think, is going to be what is turnout? For years, we've had this kind of consistent big wave turnout. You know, either people want to go out and vote for Ted Cruz, they want to go vote for Dan Patrick, they want to go vote for Donald Trump. Well, now, a lot of the times, the state representative race is the biggest thing on the ballot.
Yeah, well, and it should be. You know, I guess we'll end this, tell listeners where they can learn more about the reports you're doing, what races are going on in their corner, their neck of the woods, that they should be turning out to go vote in.
Sure, Tony. So you can find our political coverage from all across the state at empowertexans.com/onthetrail. And you can find out more about your lawmaker's record, his time in office, whether his record matches with his rhetoric at index.empowertexans.com. And we'll see you out here on the trail.
Thanks, Kerry. Are you an illegal alien living in the state of Texas? Do you want free stuff? Michael Quinn Sullivan will tell you more in this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
In 2017, Texas banned sanctuary cities. Those are cities in Texas where local law enforcement officials were refusing to cooperate with federal immigration officials. Meanwhile, the California legislature passed a law turning themselves into a sanctuary state. Maybe illegal aliens should take the hint and head to California. And maybe we should help them. With the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. It's not just all law enforcement in California that's barred from working to stop illegal immigration. California's new law actually aids illegal aliens. The legislature now requires that private employees provide up to 48 hours notice of any immigration raids planned for their business by federal immigration officials. Think about the absurdity of that. It goes from police officials passively not aiding in law enforcement to actively requiring businesses to aid and abet illegal immigration. Scratch that. It's not just absurd, it's immoral. California state government has become a criminal syndicate. But people get the government they tolerate, and we've seen entrepreneurs and job creators flee California for a decade. You can't blame them for being tired of being fleeced. Those who remain deserve the government that they've got. And since California has gone overboard in trying to be a home for illegal aliens, maybe we should give California what it wants. It's actually not a bad setup for a case study in the value of federalism. States get to set their own laws and policies, and people get to vote with their feet. For the last two decades, we've seen a steady flow of people and jobs from income tax states to states without income taxes. We've seen people flee the overregulated states like California to the, less overregulated states like Texas. And now we can see if those feet move in the other direction. California clearly doesn't want entrepreneurs and wealth creators, but they do want illegal immigrants. If it's such a good deal for everyone, California should actually want more illegal aliens to flood their cities. So we're going to help them out. We announced this week that Empower Texans will pay for the one-way travel by air or bus for illegal immigrants living in Texas to move to California. We'll send them to LA, San Francisco, Sacramento, Oakland, or San Diego. It's their choice. But here's the catch. The illegal alien has to sign a contract stating that they won't reside in Texas ever again. But really, why would they? After all, California hands out welfare benefits like grandmas hand out candy. And yes, illegal aliens get to feed easily from the taxpayer trough. Just like Texas took the job creators California didn't want, we're stepping up to help California get the illegal aliens they do want. You can learn more about our Go to California initiative at empowertexans.com. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with a Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, that's all I've got for you. Join us back here next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.